Okay, we're both recording. Martin, I did my traditional short interview with you, and I got so many people that came back to me and said, hey, we have to have a longer story. I don't normally go over 30 minutes because the intent is to drive people to your channel and have them fully immerse themselves. But I think we should do an hour. Now, the plan for this hour is I want to ask you first about what has happened to you because of these genius works of yours. And then we'll talk about your Wagga Wagga paper that changed everything. And then we'll talk about each chapter. You'll summarize each chapter in your essays on Q. So let's begin, Martin, by tell us what has happened to you in terms of deplatforming and censorship as a result of this specific work, which I consider to be a work of genius.
Okay, so as critical context, you need to understand, I had a 25-year IT and telecoms career. I started blogging in 2003 and was quite successful at it. I used to speak at conferences, even chair conferences. So I've had a public presence in the world for quite a long time. And back in 2012, I started producing my free newsletter. And I was focusing on the future of communications in its broadest sense. So it could be internet architecture or social media, whatever the phenomenon was. So come 2017, we had the arrival of Q, or QAnon phenomenon. And I was tracking it from the very beginning. And as we'll soon see, I started to write about it in an objective sense. Okay, there's this thing in the world. So what's happened to me is one of these essays started to catch a lot of attention in the middle of 2018. By the time it got about 250,000 hits on Medium, I got an email from Medium saying that your account has been suspended. Now, also in my 100 plus essays on Medium were, you know, the internet of loving kindness and why we need a statutory duty of candor, you know, all kinds of essays about just ordinary internet architecture and regulatory policy issues. But there were these few little articles I've written about Q, which clearly had touched a raw nerve amongst the powerful. Since then, I've also been deplatformed by MailChimp. So I was their customer for 10 years, and suddenly, with no notice, they cut me off, right? Because I guess I was writing about Q. I've also experienced, with this document, censorship by Dropbox. So I shared this document, which is a collation of my essays, as a Dropbox link on Twitter. And Dropbox then suspended my ability to share things via links, classifying it as malicious content. So I asked them what term of your agreement have I broken, and they couldn't find one. So they reversed the...
Let me just point out that you have not only been defamed, but all of these companies have committed tortuous interference with your livelihood. And it's unfortunate that you can't get a good team of attorneys, because I believe that properly done, discovery will reveal that there are very specific deep state actors who are pulling the strings on all of these companies, just as they pull the strings on Yahoo, on YouTube and Facebook and so forth. So wrap up the horrible things that have been done to you, and then walk us through your genius.
Actually, just to wrap it up, I'd just say across the room from me right this moment is a printing of one of my photos. So I've accidentally become a professional artist in this process. And the MailChimp deplatforming happened just at the moment I was launching my art business. And the platform I use for marketing my art prints only integrates with MailChimp. So I found myself being sabotaged for censorship right at the moment I was launching a new career.
So you're not alone. Ben Garrison has been falsely accused of being anti-Semitic. That's a trick that these people use. I've got an Israeli minister on video saying this is our trick, talking to Amy Goodman of Democracy Now. I think the world is getting fed up with deplatforming and censorship and so forth. So tell us a little bit more about the horrible things that have happened to you, but the bright cloud is you've become somewhat well known for being a Paul Revere or a Patrick Henry.
I only have one trick, which is to tell things how I see them. Yeah, so it's that's my only political trick. It's the only one I've got. So it's that's all I've done for the last 2 or 3 years is to tell things how I see them, and I've gone on a learning journey. And what I've done recently is packaged up the essays I've produced and just picked out the ones that are about Q, because I write about more things than just Q, and put them together into a free PDF. I'll turn it into a proper book at some point. And I call it Martin Geddes on Q.
This is. I mean, I'm just stunned. I mean, there are a lot of people talking about Q, including Charlie Freak and Charlie Ward. Yeah. But I think you have taken the study of Q and the meaning of Q in the larger communications and cultural context to literally a PhD level that is also grassroots relevant. So in 2 or 3 minutes, summarize your first Wagga Wagga paper.
Okay, if I just switch over to look at myself. Right, so there's 10 essays we're going to quickly run through here. And the first one is a random act of journalism. So what I did was I've been following the Q drops from the very beginning in October 2017. My very first tweet with the QAnon hashtag was in December 2017. So this is in March of 2018, and it's a newsletter to my professional base. So I'm putting my little reputation on the line here by talking about this QAnon thing. I played it down the middle. I said that there were these drops that were occurring on the on 4chan. They were interesting. And there were two different ways of seeing them. One of which was, this is a crazy load of conspiracy theory nonsense. And the other one was, this is a very, very significant release of intelligence that's happening to the public. And I let the reader decide for themselves. I just pointed them to where the information was. So it's just journalism. Yeah, it's reporting. It's saying what is, which is the very thing that the media is currently not doing with this phenomenon, which is presenting the true nature of it.
Well, it's factually based. I mean, what really brought me around to the Q side was seeing the earlier Q drops and then seeing reality. I mean, right. To include touching your nose and words in President Trump's speech. And I mean, the proof of life there is compelling to me. So now you've got, and I'll show people this table of contents. Yep. So these are the essays. So I don't want to do much talking here. Let's just walk through them one by one.
Right, so the first essay just establishes that this QAnon thing is a thing. Yeah, it's a relevant thing in the world to be discussed. The second one is where I really put my reputation on the line. So remember, this is to my professional audience. It's my income, and it's been built up over many, many years. And the audience at the time was largely telecoms tech based, rather than more general audience today. So the next one was where I made the claim that Q is a military intelligence program. So there was, by the time of May of 2018, a large body of evidence which pointed to a link between the Q drops and the Trump administration. And each individual piece of evidence linking them together was plausibly deniable. But the collection of all of them together was a body of evidence that was irrefutable from my perspective.
Now, this is pattern analysis. This is a basic analytic technique.
It's evidence that will stand up in court. Yeah, now that there are good reasons why there's this plausible deniability of Q versus Trump, about managing to skirt around certain laws, about intelligence dissemination, etc. But it was very clear by May of 2018 that Q and Trump were related. We still didn't understand the full nature of the program and the process, because of course the drops are still occurring. The Trump administration was still only just rolling out its program, etc.
Well, I think it's highly relevant that President Trump has demonstrated a grasp of social media, to include his use of Twitter, that has never been known by any prior president. I mean, he is a master of this domain. Now, in your third essay, which is the Wagga Wagga, you call it the greatest communications event in history.
Right.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so where we go wrong, we go all.
Wagga Wagga. The greatest we little people call it Wagga Wagga. But yes, right. And that's on the bell of John F. Kennedy's old boat, I understand.
Allegedly, maybe, perhaps. Yeah.
It might be false. Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's not a figural fact. So my skill in the world is not being an analyst, but a synthesist. Right? It's to step back and look at the whole big broad picture. But I'm what you might call an empathetic synthesist, which is my other half of my job is to understand how other people are not understanding. Yeah? And then give them a path to clarity. So it's two halves to it. It's see the big picture and communicate it, land it in their world. I could see by the middle of 2018, this was a major, massive phenomenon that was rolling out here. And it was basically a second American Revolution, and it was a restoration of the American Republic. And the Q program and process was it was an information weapon that was critical to disarming the weapon of the other side, which is the controlled fake mass media. The significance of this Q operation was in the middle of 2018 was not understood widely. It was still a relatively niche thing amongst people who hung out in 4chan and in kind of the internet research community.
Be looked on as a form of asymmetric warfare. In other words, it's a David versus Goliath thing. You have this mass media controlled by the deep state. The social media is controlled by the deep state. And here you have this little guerrilla force that right. reaches in and inspires.
So it's a little diversion. I received a direct message from General Flynn somewhat later than this period, which confirmed I was on the right track. So I had tweeted that it was important that we all stay on Twitter and not flee off to other platforms because this is where the war was happening. Yeah, and he sent me a direct message that said, spot on, the big thumbs up and American flag. So he has since then talked about digital soldiers and an insurgency. And what we are now seeing is a way of just like the pamphleteers were part of the first American Revolution. This is recruiting the public as a... recruiting citizen journalists as a replacement for the mass media, because what's coming is a total collapse of trust in the mass media. It could come quite soon. So after the Democrat convention, got John Durham, more indictments, and the complicity of the media in high level criminality is going to become much more obvious.
This is really fascinating because I did my first graduate thesis on predicting revolution and loss of faith in the legitimacy of the government as well as other institutions, together with concentration of wealth, which is amply in evidence, are the two big ones. So Martin, you're rather optimistic. You're giving me hope. Now your next essay was about the four functions of Q. What are those four functions?
Right. So this is kind of breaking apart the Q operation. If I scroll down myself, so four functions. This Q process is a complex one. In some ways, it's very simple to understand, but it's been cleverly put together. And I'm from a high-level academic background, and I've been working at the bleeding edge of computer science, and I know what not stupid looks like. So I could tell very early on this was a very, very meticulously put together process that could only be done by someone at a sort of state actor level. So this was my summary of what this Q thing is, and it's four main purposes. So the first one is a multi-year process of disclosure of secret illegal government activity. Right? So all kinds of bad stuff has been going on for a very long time with all kinds of actors. And the public understanding of that has been repressed through a controlled and criminal mass media. So it's the start of disseminating that reality to the public. And in particular, I think one of the critical things that the Q drops disclose early on is the 16-year plan to destroy America. So it's basically a Bolshevik Marxist revolution that was being attempted. Obama was the first half, Hillary would have been the second half and finished it off, and the military have come in with Trump to intercept that. So in order to, you can't just come straight out with that. It would either be dismissed as crazy or it would break society. So it's a way of just diffusing this understanding into the public realm in a safe.
So that's one.
Yeah. Second thing is it's a prophylactic against civil war and vigilante activity. So the corruption of the courts and the whole justice system, etc., takes time to clean up. Patriots had elected Donald Trump on a cleanup platform, And inevitably there would be impatience to get it done. We want to rest. We want to rest yesterday, tomorrow, now, whenever. That can't happen right away. There's couplings with things going on in the rest of the world. You know, it takes time.
I have noticed that the white nationalists have not gotten violent. They haven't rolled out and shot the Antifa people. And the amount of self-discipline that has been evident among the patriots has, to me, been astonishing. So what I hear you saying is that Q has been a very deliberate calming of the waters among the patriots.
And you yourself captured this a moment ago when you said that this gives me hope. So this gives us hope that there is a plan by good people in the world to restore truth and justice and equality under the law. So that's the second function. Yeah, it gives space in which the military and the Trump administration can reorder things.
That so strikes that people... me as truly epic, historical, valuable, priceless. So what's the third function?
The third one is it's a training program in discernment and logical thinking. So we've entered a world where all facts are relative and subjective, and all narratives can be changed and modified at will.
Cultural relativism is horrible.
So what this is about is regrounding our basic understanding of the world in objective facts. So the Q drops happen on places like 4chan, which are very exotic social media platforms. But there are places where people are, because it's anonymous and you can't rely on anyone's identity and authority, everything you assert has to be sourced. Like, no source, no go. So it's naturally a highly objective and empirical environment, a very skeptical environment. So the Q drops and process are a way of teaching us how to think in the right way.
The reinvention of education, or the regrounding of education,
yes,
critical thinking.
It's university for autodidacts.
Wow.
And the fourth thing that the Q drops do is that they are an information weapon against institutionalized crime and corrupted media. Right. So,
okay, so please say that again.
The fourth thing, my mouth is dry, is an information weapon against institutionalized crime and corrupted media. So what I'm hinting at here is that there's ordinary crime, there's organized crime, and there's institutionalized crime. And what we're dealing with is institutionalized crime, because the most successful criminals are the ones who persuade you that their activities are legitimate.
I would take you one level higher. There's also satanic level. There's satanic level crime, which then uses the institutions like the intelligence agencies and the banks as their organizers. So let's repeat those four levels of crime. What were the first three?
This is my idea.
Yeah.
So the basic level of personal crime.
Right. Ordinary crime.
Then there's organized crime, which brings the power of organizational theory, to criminality, but it still stands outside of the mainstream realm of society. It's opposed by society. And then there's what you might call institutionalized crime, which is crime that has become embedded into the fabric of society.
And that would include state-sponsored terrorism and government trafficking in humans and drugs. And adding to that satanic crime as the overseer.
Or a banking system has usury as its core feature.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Not only usury, but lies and fraud. I mean, naked short selling and money laundering. So let's move on, because I think people have to go read your 40-page essay, and I will point to it. Your next essay has 25 questions for the rational QAnon skeptic. I don't want to list all the questions, but why don't you give us an overview of what you were trying to do with that?
So there's some significance to this. So this is the time at which the media started to pay attention to QAnon and started to
write. This was October 2019.
Yeah. So around this time, there started to be more and more attention from the media because they clearly understood the threat. And they themselves were caught in a double bind, which is if you ignore it, then the fact that you are not reporting this stuff that delegitimizes you. And if you engage with it, then it's if you engage with it in a factual way, you lose, yeah, because it's exposing their own crimes. So, as an antidote to the subjectivist hysterical media narratives, I went the other way and just said, okay, here in a Socratic method approach, here are just 25 questions to ask yourself about the media and this QAnon phenomenon. Now, when I gave this list to one of my close friends, who still doesn't get Trump, is a very bright person, he says it makes him feel all kind of confused and it feels horrible inside. And because anything that challenges your core beliefs triggers this, this great internal resistance. So if you give this list to someone and they find it hard to even engage with the questions, that itself is interesting. You can ask them, why do you find it hard to engage with simple, rational, objective questions? So it's a way of triggering the reflective practice of, are you reacting emotionally to this subject, or are you reacting rationally?
Well, what really strikes me is, I think that when Carnegie and Mellon and Rockefeller acquired the public education system in the United States, mm-hmm. they did so with the intent of using it to create docile factory workers that did not question authority. So now your next essay is all about questioning authority, understanding QAnon Indeed. As the antidote to, and when I use the word authority, I mean malicious authority, authority that is unjust and illegitimate.
I would say it's a little bit different, which is, it's about do you take the authority yourself? Are you a self-sovereign individual and willing to be accountable for looking at the information and making your own choices, even if they're unpopular? Versus, do you externalize your authority to someone else, a source of authority?
Proxy,
So the real point of this essay is that the media tries to position the QAnon phenomenon as a rival authority to itself. These people are in a cult because they've all bought into this illegitimate authority, and that isn't what it's about, right? So the Q process is about removing the need for external authority. So the traditional media presents itself as authoritative because you have nice people in suits who are well lit and makeup on, with beautiful graphics, and illustrious brands like the New York Times or whatever. And someone who writes the New York Times is proud because their name is associated with that authority. And the purpose of the Q drops and process is to get us to question that authority and to reclaim it for ourselves. So it's essentially about thinking for yourself, but also being willing to be accountable for coming to your own conclusions. And I think now, this is going beyond the essay, being willing to forgive yourself when you get it wrong.
I could spend a lifetime studying your stuff. Now, let me just interject that it's not just the media that has illegitimate authority. I think of society as 8 major players, and in alphabetical order, the academy, commerce, especially small business, government, especially local, law enforcement, and then the media, the military, and nonprofits. And what I found in 2008, when I wrote Election 2008, Lipstick on the Pig, is that all of our institutions, without exception, including the Boy Scouts and the churches and so forth, are now totally illegitimate. They have been hijacked. They are led by people who have photos of themselves with their pants unzipped now, Gary Falwell Jr. These are hypocrites who have been bribed and blackmailed into essentially setting aside the public interest. So I hear you saying that QAnon is, in fact, an extraordinarily brilliant antidote to that kind of illegitimacy.
So what happened when the printing press arrived was that it accidentally upset the balance in society between psychopathic doctrines and non-psychopathic ones. If you put a Mein Kampf on the shelf in the bookstore, even if the reader rejects every word inside the book, the very fact that it's on the shelf has shifted the framing of debate. So the arrival of the printing press and then the mass media enable psychopathic doctrines to outspread the rest.
Now, is this what you cover in your next chapter called QAnon, Information Osmosis and Reality Purification?
Kind of, yes.
So okay, that was written in January of 2020.
Yes, there's a process by which we have to go and kind of undo the psychopathic doctrines that are spread everywhere, right? So the next essay has a rather fun title, yeah, QAnon, Information Osmosis and Reality Purification. So it uses the metaphor of purifying water with osmosis. The point of this essay is to explain how the Q drops kind of provide the pressure, you know, of reality. But the membrane, which is allowing us to reconstruct a purified reality that's been polluted by lies, is the plausible deniability process. So remember that the Q, the identity of Q is deliberately obfuscated, right? Is that there's all these little bits of information that link Q to the Trump administration, but there's nothing that's a direct slam dunk. So that relationship is plausibly deniable. And what it does is it allows us to kind of bring reality up to one side of the membrane, right, which is the person who's been deceived by the media, and bring them close to the other side. But it doesn't kind of force that reality upon them. It allows them to use their free will to kind of pull reality across. So it's a non-violent process in that sense. Does it make sense? It's like
brilliant. You know, I mean, I bought into Q, but it wasn't until you explained Q in your 40-page collection of essays that I really began to grasp the enormity and the brilliance and the pervasiveness and the good of Q. You've done it. You've done it. There's a reason they're after you.
So there was a wise thing I read recently that said nobody wants to believe they've been brainwashed. If you show them the mechanisms of the brainwashing, then they can begin to understand it. So this is the mechanisms of the reverse brainwashing process. You know, this is how do you take a population that has been mass mind controlled through a corrupted media industry?
I recommend to everybody that they read my review of Tavistock, which is about social engineering out of the British Empire. And that they also read The Culture of Critique, which is about how the Zionists are brainwashing everybody while retaining their tribal privileges.
So rather than building a equal and opposite reverse brainwashing, it's kind of built an anti-brainwashing process. Yeah. So what we're having to do is we are reconstructing reality as a collective. So all of the independent researchers and citizen journalists who are all in the public realm and therefore do not have access to classified material are working with open sources and public material to undo the decades of pollution of the official narrative that the media is engaged in.
Do you believe that let's say Trump is reelected and he needs to reconstruct? I've decided I have to dedicate the rest of my life to reinventing and reconstructing education, intelligence, decision support, and research. Those three things need to be reinvented because right now they're all some combination of stupid and evil. Do you think that the Great Awakening can occur quickly, or is this going to take 10 years?
Now, that's a really hard one to answer. I think there'll be an initial shock, and it's coming quite soon. Yeah, once the indictments start to come from John Durham, etc., it snowballs very quickly, and the collapse of faith in the mass media happens very quickly.
Forgive me for interrupting, because I want to add to this. I see three major pressure points where the president could do full disclosure. One is 9/11, another is Epstein and Maxwell and everybody that they compromised. And the third is stellar civilizations and free energy. Yes. Do you see those three as catalysts for accelerating the Great Awakening?
Yes, and which is you can't deny the existence of a technology which is disclosed to you and shown to work. Yeah, it's kind of, oh, I didn't realize that existed. It's a reality jar on you. However, it doesn't instantly cure the underlying problem, which is individuals who've given up their own sovereignty to decide, you know, their conscience, they've outsourced their conscience to elsewhere. And the way that evil works is it persuades you that the good is bad and bad is good, and gets you to put all your righteous energy into illegitimate causes. that's going to take time to unwind. And the damage is multi-generational around the subversion of the education system. It's going to take, a lot of people are going to be quite broken by this. You know, there's going to be a lot of mutual therapy required in order to, a lot of kindness and compassion that's going to be required, because we've all been duped to some level. So I think at the intellectual level, we can get things right pretty quickly. But one of the things I've learned in life is that emotional work is hard work and it can't be rushed. So the emotional recovery will take time, and it may be a multi-generational activity.
I think that's very important. You're saying that the emotional recovery is going to be a multi-generational task. I almost have tears. I mean,
What's been done to us is so awful. Once you understand it,
it's satanic. It's really satanic. Yeah, and that's why I add that satanic level to your levels. Now, your next essay, and we have three more. The next essay is Why QAnon is the Biggest Story in the History of Journalism. And that was written in February of 2020.
Right. So the first 100 or so drops of the from Q, which you can go and read in an hour or two, contain many eye-popping claims about the world, which you and I know are well grounded in actuality. I think I could just read out the first five, just to, to give an illustration.
Yes, whatever you wish. Yeah. So my intent is for everyone to go read your 40 pages.
So what I did here was go to the first 100 drops and pull out the key claims and say, given that this is the Trump administration, okay, plausibly deniable, claiming these things, even just the claims, forget the reality, just the claims would be the biggest story in journalism ever. The reality is not a whole extra level. So just first five claims I pulled out here from Q drop number three. Many in our government worship Satan.
Yep.
That's a big story. Q drop number five. MS-13 is a gang paid to kill Democrat political opponents. That's a big story.
And another big story is that the Bush family actually ran the Mexican cartels, and NAFTA was part of making it easier to smuggle drugs and children across the border. Bill Clinton is a criminal leader, and so was George Bush, and so was Obama, and so was Cheney.
Cue drop number six, it says, there has been a hostile takeover of the U.S. government from an evil, corrupt network of players, not just Democrats. That's a big story. Cue drop number seven, Obama ultimately okayed Hillary Clinton's illegal email server by using non-government email addresses to communicate with Clinton. That's a big story. So it goes on and on.
It is a big story, absolutely. So that's you do more there. Now the next to last chapter is Q561. It's not a conspiracy theory if it's true.
It's true.
February 2020.
Right. So there's all these stories that are being overlooked by the media. They're trying to make all of these things into non-stories because they all point to the complicity of their sponsors or themselves. You know, it's like So Q561, this drop, is interesting because it points to the mechanism by which the mass media is being controlled, and one part of the mechanism, one cog, which is the 4 a.m.
Can you read that one out, Q561?
So what it says is the mainstream media is fake news, it's propaganda, talking points, 4 a.m., private email addresses, paid contractors, judgment day. So what this is telling us, and we have a sense of who these contractors are, which is the military industrial complex has been building a propaganda machine, and it sends out coordinated talking points at 4 a.m. each day to editors and journalists to make the stories for the day. And what appear to be independent private news entities are actually all state entities, but entities of the deep state, not of the official formal state. So people have been watching state media, but it's criminal state media, it's mafia media. So this is a specific claim about the 4 a.m. drops, which again is a massive story, which is effectively coming from the Trump administration. So this is disclosing to us how the media has been controlled and corrupted, and we can start to piece together that's how do we get to where we are? Because where we are is very crazy. And this is the kind of evidence that Q-drops contain. It's now at the moment, not everything can be backed up by hard, hard facts. It's
let me point out that NSA does first, have it all. And Binnie and I are the ones who originated that term. We have it all. And now it's in popular use. The problem is NSA only processes 1% of what it has. Now, it may be processing 5% for the president, but I am persuaded that until Mike Flynn and Bill Binney get back into government service, the president is not going to have full access to everything that NSA has. And I believe that the deep state is busy trying to erase the NSA databases. But what Binney has told me is they don't know where the backups are. So this is very exciting. Now, your last item is hashtag ask the Q, ignorance is not strength. And that was written in March 2020.
Right. Let's remind myself this one. Oh, yes, right. So, the heart of this is many of us experience a very stressful relationships at the moment with our friends, our family, our colleagues, and associates, because we have different perspectives on the world. And everyone seems to believe that they've got the rational and objective view of the world. Nobody likes to believe they're a fool. So at the heart of this Q thing is a very, very simple mechanism, which is a very simple question, which is, who is Q? So there's all this stuff coming out, which provably comes from the same source through cryptographic trip codes, but is not officially a communication from the Trump administration. It's clearly unofficial. Now, the media treats this question of who is Q as absolutely taboo. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of articles coming out about QAnon. But they all say it's wacky, wacko, conspiracy theory and nonsense. Don't pay attention.
And you also have fake Qs. You have people claiming to be Q.
You have all kinds all kinds of other people out there doing similar things. But it's the base reality of there are a series of drops which come from the same source, which contain a very, very large amount of evidence, hundreds of pieces of evidence, that it is the Trump administration talking to us through a back channel. It's and the media will not ask who Q is. It's, they won't tell you, they won't discuss that subject. And that is the key to opening up the discussion with someone. Say, okay, you might think this is all crazy, but help me understand for a moment. Why won't they ask the simple question? Because hey, if Q was, say, Russian intelligence, this would be Russian interference.
Lucifer 3.0!
That'd be terrible. So we have to eliminate that shortly, very quickly. You know, having all these people being led on this crazy journey by this Q thing, that'd be terrible. So, the fact that that question is taboo is all you need to know that these people over there are not involved in journalism. They're involved in propaganda and mind control.
Has Q gone silent recently?
Q has episodes and periods of silence. And one of the things I had to learn early on, this is the thing I got wrong in that Where We Go, When We Go All Greatest Communications Event in History essay. And in some ways, what I got wrong is more interesting than what I got right.
Let's talk about that.
The thing I got wrong was in one of the early Q drops, it talks about some great parade on 11/11. And I assumed that meant there'd be some victory parade in November of 2018. And my little ego, wanting to be validated as making good predictions, said, this is all going to be over in 6 months. I had no clue about the wider picture with China and just how big the swamp was and how deep the rot was. Yeah. I assume they'd be able to...
I just lost you.
...these things relatively quickly. And I was wrong. So now we're realizing we're in a process that the Trump process is in some ways we're only just now at the end of 4 years getting to the point where it's safe to disclose to the public the nature of the crimes that have been committed. So I'm not sure what I thought.
But you said you got 11-11 wrong, and what was the right?
Operational side. So that's so the cue drops give us a picture of the intention, and they lead us through some of the process. So like, you know, Kavanaugh confirmation or the Pfizer process. What they don't disclose in advance is operational information. So you don't hand the enemy, you know,
right,
the keys to your plan. So what we find is that the cue drops contain all kinds of one-way trapdoors, where after the event you can look backwards, you know, future proves past, and you can see that there was a plan, but the information has been encoded in a way that was, you know, it was not possible to discern before the event what the, you know, the information would mean. So our understanding of the information in the cue drops is constantly evolving and expanding. And we are in the midst of an information war. Yeah, once you understand that it's an information war and the nature of that thing, then a lot becomes easier to deal with.
You know, I just trashed a movie, Shadowgate, which was two low-level people absolutely bullshitting about stuff. However, they were really on kind of at one level totally wrong, but another level totally right about what Tavistock and everybody can do with Google and media manipulation and so forth. I agree with you. We are in an information war. Now, how would you evaluate the recent pandemic from the Q perspective and from the satanic perspective?
Right. It very much beds into the Q foundation of understanding the wider context, and in particular understanding the role of China and the global deep state in setting up the Chinese Communist Party and what happened with Mao, etc. It's like there's a big backstory here.
Do you believe that Xi Jinping, Vladimir Putin, and Donald Trump are collaborating in taking down the deep state?
I think so, but I can't prove it. And we have to be able to live with a great deal of uncertainty still. So, you know, the Q drops are just one of many, many, many sources of information. And they're helping us to paint a picture of what's going on in the world, much of that understanding has been hoarded in secret societies and intelligence agencies. In terms of the pandemic, it appears to be very clearly a terrorist, global terrorist false flag, effectively.
It also revealed the total control of the media, and it allowed all of the stock exchanges to clear all their naked short selling. So this was a massive takedown.
Yes. Now, my guess, this is a guess, yeah, so take it lightly, is that the deep state itself has been infiltrated for a very long time, and the white hats have understood the nature of the plans. You can't always stop these plans, but you can modify them and you can redirect them to other purposes. So under the cover of this this pandemic, all kinds of other stuff is happening.
I have goosebumps.
and it is exposing. I would never have guessed. I mean, even as someone who's been studying this crime and corruption stuff now for years, the level to which the medical industry, withholding cures, for cancer, really? You go, oh my goodness. Blah. It's like,
no, we've all been commoditized. And I finally figured out war when I realized that the profits from war are concentrated in the banks. And even though the profits from peace are 1,000 times greater, they're so evenly distributed among the 99%. That nobody's bribing Congress to do war. So this is really epic. So
what I think is happening on the back of this is that we get a global economic reset, and you take away the power from the central bankers to create money to fund both sides of wars and to create bribes and give your favorite commercial banks extra cash and liquidity. It's all that cheating is going to go away. But now we have a clear reason why all the existing governments and political systems need to be taken away, because we have clear evidence of coordination amongst the media with the corrupted academic base, with the corrupted government base, to launch a massive attack on their own populations. Yeah, and this is what we're experiencing. We're experiencing terrorism right now. Yeah, mask wearing and the fear inducing is terrorism.
I think you're right. And what really impresses me as a student of revolution is the discipline of the nationalists, the discipline of the people at home. Now, when Antifa has tried to go into a small town of patriots, they've had the shit beat out of them. Yeah. So it's only in the urban centers where they're supported by Democratic politicians and the police are told to back off that they're getting away with this crap. But it's not only a revolution, as you say, but what I'm seeing is the counter-revolution is showing more discipline.
Yes, yeah, the famous phrase, yeah, the righteous man only kind of bears his sword very reluctantly. It's but luckily in the information space, we can be intellectual thugs. You know, is dismembering and killing off bad ideas is a non-violent activity. So we can be very peaceful and at the same time be fearsome intellectual and digital warriors and soldiers.
So should I just go sailing and trust the plan and not worry that Trump isn't reaching out to blacks and independents and libertarians? Is everything under control and guys like me and Charlie Ward should just stop talking about it?
No, I think it's once the internet of money, the central banking system, is reformed and the ability of it's kind of, you know, the root problem of this corruption, control over money. Yeah, well, surprise. It's and you also have an exposure of the corrupt media industry, and lots of other things naturally flow out of it.
Agriculture, medicine.
All this effort we put in now, and waking people up and educating people, is going to firstly ease the pain of transition. So some things we can't control, yeah, is that the replacement of the financial system backbone outside your and my hands, but we can definitely affect how much pain people endure. And it can be a very simple personal level. So I've had people reach out to me who are in marriages where what the other person is anti-Trump and they're pro-Trump, whatever, and they're really struggling. It's we can stop marriages falling apart. We can stop families falling apart. Yeah, we can save friendships. It's and all of it's personal. The other thing we can affect is the quality of the world we create. So an old world is going away. A new world is arriving. And we can influence its culture and its its values and its aesthetics. Values and aesthetics. So the structure of the world that's coming may be in some ways predetermined by others, but we can colour it. And what we require is a massive cultural renaissance.
Renaissance. I'll say it in English. I'll say it in American. A cultural renaissance. What you're really saying is a world of, by, and for we the people rather than the 1%.
I think the 1% label is maybe unhelpful because it's really about the Satanists and the satanic values. So they've captured movies, music, modern art, etc.
Christian evangelicals.
The reason why, you know, I've got still in its packaging, but yeah, the reason I've got my art print of my own art across the way is I started just doing picturing the beauty of the ordinary world around me, yeah, and people on social media reacted positively to that and wanted to buy it. So it accidentally became a new career, but we need to go back to celebrating the aesthetics of beauty and harmony and peace, because a lot of modern art doesn't. And it's deliberately set up to jar and to create dissonance and separation. So by engaging in these conversations, we're laying the foundations for that cultural renaissance. Yeah, we're taking away the barriers to belief that such a thing is possible.
You know, I'm really moved by this. This is possibly the most important interview I've ever done, and I'm grateful to you. I'm also thinking about localization and self-sustainability and made in America. Nicholas Nassim Taleb, who wrote Black Swans, has also written Anti-Fragile. And Eleanor Ostrom got a Nobel Prize before it was diminished in its reputation for writing a book called Governing the Commons. And what she discovered was that only local people know enough about something to regulate it. And only yes. local people are present with sufficient constancy and ethical appreciation for the locality to enforce whatever rules they come up with. So I'm really drawn back to the contrast between the Jeffersonian vision of an America that is a heartland, that is agrarian, that is localized, and the Hamiltonian vision of banks and cities. And I think in many ways, we need to reopen the West with free energy and unlimited desalinated water. We need to distribute the population. We need to retrain everybody into where they can be preppers. I mean, I just read this organic prepper thing, and this lady completely reinvented her life. She learned how to can food, how to grow food, can food, fix things. We're going back to self-sufficiency.
So I used to live in Overland Park, Kansas. Yeah, I've lived in Kansas for 3 years.
Yes.
And I started to appreciate the small town America. Yeah, I lived in Kansas City, so I mean, yeah, in a city, but I made a real effort to go around and look at the place. And once you start to understand the scale of the United States and how that affects the interaction, the culture, and how it's structured, it was quite an eye-opener for me as someone from London. My world was very different.
No, in fact, there's a very famous book, The Nine Nations of North America, that talks about nine completely separate cultures.
There's a great book, recent one, which is about small town America and how there's lots of innovation happening.
Social. Are you speaking of Our Towns by James and Deborah Fallows? Yes. I've interviewed him, and Our Towns is absolutely a phenomenal book.
Right. So I read your review of that book. I'm so
glad
there are people who
gave me that. Let's draw to a close. I'm going to point to people where they can support you through Patreon. Are you offering your art for sale through any channel?
Yes. So if you go to martingeddes.gallery, you'll see the prints that are for sale.
Make sure I have that email, and I'll put it in the description. Martin, I want to give you the last word, but I want to say I just cannot overstate my admiration and my gratitude for what you have done. Thank you.
Yeah, this has been a hard journey. It's been rough, yeah, to be honest. It's people sometimes look at me on Twitter with 190,000 followers or something, and they imagine something that is but I come from a slightly privileged background in the sense I'm having a privileged education. I've done the corporate thing, but this last 2 years have been rough. Yeah, it's and I'm really looking forward to there's a transition point coming up pretty soon. Yeah, where all of the crazy QAnon people are suddenly going to be seen as quite prescient and maybe diligent and honest, and at last there'll be a little bit of respect. Yeah, it's like I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let me say, I know Mike Flynn. I like Mike Flynn, and I will give you one of my highest compliments. I think you are a founding father of the new cultural renaissance. Thank you.
I've worked hard at it.
God bless you.